This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to a new year and episode 174 of Shutters Inc. Been a slightly longer break than we anticipated, but we both needed it. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPhotography.com. Who am I? Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. I'll get it right in a minute. And with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, it's obviously been too long a break. Mr. Shelton Muller, how are you?
I'm well. You seem a little out of practice there, my friend.
I think so.
Maybe we shouldn't take quite so long a holiday, you know.
How have you been?
I've really been disappointed. Oh, excellent. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Just really enjoying, you know, getting out of the headspace and slowly getting back into it, which is really cool, you know. You need a little bit of time at the end of every year to just get everything out of your head and do nothing if you possibly can.
Tell me about it.
You know, time with family and all of that is beautiful. It's wonderful. And our, you know, without friends and family, our lives are fairly, you know, purposeless. But, you know, that's one thing. But your work, as much as I love my work, you know, you need to get it out and, you know, put it somewhere else for a little while.
Unplug.
And then slowly segue back in. But I'm all segued now, so I'm happy to be back doing Shutters Inc. Mate, I've missed you.
Likewise. So have I.
A lot's been happening in our worlds while we've had this break.
It has. Now, before we go down that track, you were about to say something. You were disappointed with something.
Well, I'm rather disappointed with our listeners, Bruce, to be quite candid with you.
Right. Okay.
Well, where have all the emails been?
That is a good question, because there haven't been many at all.
That have said, hey, boys, we're missing you. When's the podcast coming back? You know, my photography's dying here. I took some pictures on the weekend, and they were crap, and that's only because I didn't have Shutters Inc. this week to get me inspired. You know, stuff like that. I'm thinking, where? You know, in the words of the Rolling Stones, wasn't it the Rolling Stones? Where have all the emails gone? You know, who sang that song?
Where have all the flowers gone?
Anyway. I
can't remember who that was. I remember the song title, and that's about it.
Yeah, well, you're too young probably to remember that thing.
I was going to say, it would have been a mid-60s thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was around, but you weren't. Not quite. Not yet, right?
That's about it.
You just missed the mid-60s, didn't you, dude?
I did. I was 68, so... just missed the moon landing.
Yeah. No, the moon landing was in 69.
Oh, was
20th of June, 1969, yeah.
I think it was
the 20th of June.
Oh, so I was here for that. Oh, for some reason, I was thinking it was 68, but anyway.
No, 69. And I remember it. I actually remember the moon landing. I would have been 6 years old,
yep.
And I remember the moon landing, watching it on TV.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if only I'd known then, it was all done in a TV studio in a basement in Hollywood.
Are you one of those people that subscribes to the conspiracy theory that it wasn't real?
I think they're rather fun. I tell you what, here's a conspiracy theory I've really had a lot of fun looking at recently, and that's the Billy Shears conspiracy. Now, the moment I say that name, everyone will remember that famous point in the Sgt. Pepper's album where he goes, Billy Shears, what would you do if I... That bit, right?
Okay.
Remember that bit?
No, because never heard the album.
Sgt. Pepper's.
That's
you
cool.
know, it goes from the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band song opening...
Right.
Into, you know, A Goodbye With a Little Help from My Friends, the original version, with Ringo Starr lead vocals.
Right.
But in between, they sing Billy Shears. Right. Now, Billy Shears, here's the interesting thing. Billy Shears, allegedly, apparently, I don't remember, but won a competition as a lookalike competition to play, you know, as Paul McCartney. Now, the theory, you might remember the theory that Paul McCartney is dead.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yes. Well, apparently the theory is that he was killed in a car accident and with a lovely meter maid named Rita.
Right.
And, you know, you'll remember that post-1966, 67, the Beatles never did another live concert until the Rooftop concert that they were famous for in the late 60s.
Oh, okay.
Because apparently Paul McCartney was killed in this accident and... And this fellow named Billy Shears was brought in as the Paul McCartney replacement in an endeavor to sort of keep things moving. Now, if you go to YouTube, right, and you type in Billy Shears, you'll see some amazing documentary conspiracy theory footage that will knock your socks off.
Right, okay.
As to Paul McCartney actually being dead. Now, I'm not saying Paul McCartney's dead, but this stuff is really, really cool.
Okay.
So, you know, Billy Shears and Wings, that's mm-hmm. they were an interesting band, you know? I don't know where, look, I don't know why Billy Shears, who is probably still alive, who won that look-alike competition, apparently he's a Canadian, he's not arcing up and saying, hey, how can I be Paul McCartney if I'm actually Billy Shears? You know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Where's Billy Shears to refute the argument that Paul McCartney is dead and that Billy Shears still is alive and is well and living in Canada? Hey?
He's probably made a heap of money out of it and is quite happy being the recluse.
Well, yeah. Oh, he's learned to talk like that, you know, and he's living on the mull of Kintyre. That's right. Who knows? Who knows? But, you know, the whole thing about John Lennon being shot, you know, George Harrison, they were shut up. That was the thing. They were actually assassinated because they were about to reveal the Paul McCartney conspiracy. Okay. Look it up, dude. Don't laugh at me now. When the truth comes out, I'll be laughing last, dude.
All right.
You know? So, yep, moon landing, all filmed in a Hollywood basement. You know, 9/11, American government conspiracy, and mm-hmm. Paul McCartney is dead. There you go.
Right.
And considering this is a photography podcast,
we're way off the track.
Yeah, going off the track. And you had some awesome stuff happen over the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, since we last recorded a podcast, I think the last episode I talked about Scott and Stacey's wedding, which at that point I had shot, but wasn't in a position to publish any of the photos because the bride and groom hadn't seen them yet. So I, between Rakesh
and... Oh, you do that, do you? Are you that ethical?
Well, unless I've got the approval of the bride and groom, and she'd said, you know, look, it's okay if you post just a few, but, you know, we'd kind of like to see them all before you publish a heap of them. And I said, that's fine. So anyway, between Rakesh and I, we shot about 800 photos for the wedding. And
that's not bad, actually, considering two photographers only 800 photographs.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty economical.
Well, and it's a great approach. Really,
yeah,
totally. Sort of overshot thing. Absolutely, well done.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, both of us were of that mindset. It's like, well, you know, if you just go trigger happy, then you're just going to spend twice or three times as long in Lightroom going through and, you know, star rating or flagging, you know, the killer shots. You know, I'd rather just be a little more... you know, discretionary with my shooting and not have to go through as many images later.
Yeah.
So anyway, out of the 800... Sorry? Yep.
No, you don't need that many photographs.
No. And I heard someone say that, you know, they knew of, you know, wedding photographers who shot 3,000 and 4,000 images at a wedding. It's like, holy crap.
Yes.
I would hate to have to go through that many images to put an album together.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
So anyway, I went through all of the images and I came up with about 104, I think it was, that I thought were the pick of the bunch and worthy of putting in the album. I had Stacey come over to my house and I said to her, look, these are the ones that I've chosen. What do you think? We went through them all. And I was really pleased with myself because, A, she didn't say no to any of the images that I had chosen. And out of a potential, you know, other 700 images, she only added another 6.
Wow.
So I thought, wow, I was pretty much in the ballpark there, you know, in terms of what I'd chosen. So then we went through, you know, that 110 odd images, and she said, you know, when you put the album together, make these ones you know, large feature images and, you know, the rest do as you please kind of thing. And I had a company called My Reflections over in Western Australia do the photo book for me.
Okay.
They're a mob that I used 3 years ago when I shot Dan and Kate's wedding, and also when Kath and Max and I did
that 3 years ago?
3.5 years ago, yeah. It's scary, isn't it? And also when we did our US road trip, I did a photo book of our holiday, and I had My Reflections do both of those photo books, and I was absolutely blown away with the quality of what they produced then. When I got the photo books this time round, because they arrived yesterday, I ordered two copies, one for Scott and Stacey and one for me to keep as a portfolio or a profile type thing. These guys have just lifted their game so much in 3 years. Like, the quality of the product has just gone ahead in leaps and bounds, and I was just blown away with how nice it came up. And Stacey came over to my house this evening, just an hour ago, and picked up the book, and she flicked through it, and she was absolutely stoked with it. So, yeah, that was a good result all round.
There is your reward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
the happy bride, a few little tears, a little bit of excitement. Ah, beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know,
well done.
Thank you. Yeah, the half dozen images that she chose to add to the album that I hadn't picked were images that, you know, photographically might not have been brilliant, but they were emotional things on her part. You know, they were either members of family that held some significance, or, you know, they were certain emotional things more than photographic things. And I guess that's something you just learn over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I don't know that you could ever predict 100%.
No,
you know,
probably not.
What your clients are going to want. It, you know, seems fairly, you know, you can't really read their minds that well and be hard to predict. I think to get mostly right and, you know, only six, you know, not included, there'd be few photographers who'd be able to actually say that that's what they've, you know, been able to achieve. Well done, mate. Well done.
Yeah, I was happy with that.
You should become a photographer.
Maybe I will.
take this thing up, you know.
And my brother-in-law, and his girlfriend of 10 years, who were both in the respective halves of the bridal party for Scott and Stacey's wedding, because they're great friends, they are now engaged and have asked me to shoot their wedding later this year. So
that's the way it works.
Exactly. So I'll have another wedding to shoot. I think it's going to be August, but they haven't finalised a date yet. So. Yeah, right. So after that, I did the 3-day shoot with Paul Mercurio for New England Northwest Tourism, which is a region of northern New South Wales. And
now here's the interesting thing: even our American listeners will know who Paul Mercurio is.
Yeah, probably.
Our overseas listeners,
they probably
because if they've
will.
Seen a great Aussie, a little Aussie, you know, bottler of a film called Strictly Ballroom.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Which is not a movie about a tight pair of underpants. then they will know that that's Paul Mercurio right there.
That's right. Yeah. And unbeknownst to me, after Paul shot Strictly Ballroom, he went off to America and he actually made about another 7 films over in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Which I was unaware of.
Yeah, well, I knew that he did some, but I can't remember remember them, unfortunately.
No.
But I know that he had a little, you know, burst there where he was very popular indeed. And, which is great and deserved it. So how'd the shoot go? Tell me about it.
It was fantastic. So that we all met at the airport here in Sydney on the Sunday afternoon, and the plan was they were flying us to Moree, which is a little country town, northern New South Wales. And the plan was that we would land in Moree. We'd throw all of our bags onto the bus. The bus is a 24-seater, you know, coaster bus. There's only about 10 of us on it, so it wasn't too squishy on board. And they were going to drive us out of town to this property where we were going to be fed and we'd meet this farmer and, you know, show us around and blah, 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 blah. So we get to Moree, right? Everyone grabs their bags. And Paul's going, my bag's not here. And so they had a quick frantic search around. They've gone, nothing's still on the plane. That's definitely all the bags that came up from Sydney. So our tour coordinator had to get on the plane and on the phone and ring, you know, QantasLink back in Sydney and say, you know, we're missing this bag, you know, and of all the people's bags to lose, it had to be Paul's. So they said, oh, we'll get it on the plane tomorrow morning. Because there's only one plane per day to Moree. And so we jump on the bus and we all head off to Woolies because Paul needed to buy a toothbrush and some toothpaste and a clean shirt for the next day. So the trip didn't start exactly as planned, but we got out and we had our meal on this property. And you know, just it was an interesting trip. I was completely unfamiliar with these kinds of excursions. The idea was that it was a 3-day road trip. Paul Mercurio as the ambassador for New England Northwest Tourism, myself as photographer, and 4 journalists who work for a range of different publications here in Australia, who essentially were there to learn all about the New England region and to then go away and write stories about the New England and why it's a nice place to visit and a good place to go for a holiday and so on and so forth. And my job was just to capture images of everything that went on over the 3 days. Well, anyway, the guy who was driving the bus was a guy called Les, who's a top bloke. He's retired, but he used to be involved with Inverell Tourism, which is another town, Inverell. And I'm kind of jumping about here. I'll quickly run through the 3 days, right? So we did this property on the Sunday night, went back to our motel, crashed there for the night, went to breakfast the following day. This trip was crazy, man. We worked out in 3 days they fed us 26 courses. It was insane.
You put on some weight,
I think I did. So there was a 4-course breakfast. Then it was on the bus and we drove down to a place called Narrabri where we had morning tea, followed by a 3-course lunch. Then back on the bus across to a little town called Bingaro where we stopped for afternoon tea. And then across to Inverell. Then the following day it was Glen Innes. And then the Wednesday it was Armidale where we finished the tour. And On the Wednesday around lunchtime-ish, I guess, we were at the Armidale Art Museum or Art Gallery. And Les says to everybody, anything you want to take, you know, to have with you through the day, grab it off the bus now because I'm taking all the bags out to the airport and dumping them now and then I'm heading back to Inverell and I won't be seeing you again. And so I said, okay, well, I better get my bags off because I'm not going to the airport. So I went and grabbed my bags off the bus. And so we're all standing there on the footpath beside the bus. And Les says, you know, I just want to say a couple of words. He said, out of all the years I've been involved in tourism and of all the photographers I've ever worked with, he said, I just want to say how professional Bruce has been over this 3 days. He has been an absolute, you know, legend to work with. And he just went on and on. And I'm just standing there like, whoa, that's awesome. And he was saying this in front of, you know, the tourism manager from Armidale and these 4 journos and the tour coordinator. And I'm just like, oh, wow, thanks, Les, you know. And he said, nah, mate, he said, you've been absolutely fantastic. You've been really easygoing, great to work with, you know, really personable, blah, 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 blah. I was like, wow, that's cool. So that was a really, really nice thing to, you know, to hear right at the end of the 3 days. And after I had then, you know, a couple of days later, Kath and I and Max had headed off on our holiday, I got an email from the girls here in Sydney. And they said, you know, we've had no end of positive feedback from everybody about how fantastic you were to work with And they said, you know, Les up there in Inverell is just, you know, screaming your names from the rooftops, and don't be surprised if he contacts you, you know, to do some more work for them. So it was...
My thought here is, and that's great news. I'm just thinking, you know, while you're talking, something that I absolutely unequivocally believe in, and that is, look, I mean, you look at your photographs, and no doubt you did some great work. Okay, if you didn't provide great photographs, then well, you could hardly call yourself a photographer. That's your job, to come in and provide great photographs for your client, right?
Yep.
So no doubt you did that.
Yeah.
But what if, you know, what we've talked about on this podcast before, and what we talk a lot about at our workshops, is that the photographer actually should come above and beyond that. And you provided something that was better than just, you know, just photography. You provided them great service, a professional attitude, so much more. I often liken it to, I mean, if you hire a plumber to come in and... you know, fix your tap or whatever, you expect that he'll come in and he'll fix your tap.
Yep.
But if he comes in and he's professional, doesn't, you know, put dirty, muddy boots all over your carpet, if he has a couple of blonde jokes up his sleeve, you know, whatever, if he makes the experience a little bit more pleasurable and he does it at a good price, then he's done what you hired him to do. You expect that plumber to know how to fix your tap.
Yeah.
But you didn't expect that he would be careful with his boots, that he would, you know, make sure not to scratch your counter in the kitchen with his tools. Yeah. You know, just little things like that. If he came in, you know, didn't talk to you, was a bit grumpy, fixed your tap, you know, put the invoice on your counter and walked out, he still would have provided the very service for which you, you know, requested his service, requested his talents.
Yep.
But it wouldn't be the same service as him coming in, being friendly, and, you know, and
totally.
And that is the difference. And that is probably why you as a photographer received these accolades, not because of your photography, just for your photography.
Yeah.
Because Bruce, you were expected as a photographer, you're expected to
be able to take a good photo. Yeah.
You know, and that's great. That's exactly it. But what was not expected, and this is what you've been receiving the accolades for, was the stuff that has very little to do with the photography or the photographs themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you were professional, great to work with, et cetera, et cetera. And you'll notice that, you know, what you provided as a service was what was expected of you, plus the personal and professional aspect. I think that is going to be a defining difference between, you know, those who want to be professional photographers and succeed, and those who just provide photographs and not, you know, add themselves to that concoction, as it were.
Yeah, you know, I guess I think about the number of times that you've, you know, put on your affected French accent and paid out on the photographers who, oh, it's all about my heart.
You know, you're talking about, I don't do that, you know.
And
I can't talk now. I'm with the AIPP now myself, you see, so I'm one of these guys.
But
I didn't say that, did I? Did I just say that? Sorry, it's the Omsky Tourette's.
But I relate to that. You know, I do believe, you know, no matter what business you're in, you need to, I don't know, I guess be personable, be easy to get along with. You know, don't make the business interaction more difficult for your client than it needs to be.
Oh. And they will hire you again because you did what you were expected to do, plus you added the unexpected element. And for those of you who are listening out there, we've talked about this before, the Fast Track Photographer by Dane Sanders. That's exactly what he's talking about. Bruce, you went out there and you sold Bruce Williams. You didn't sell photographs.
Yeah.
You sold Bruce Williams.
Yeah.
Bruce Williams provides photographs. That's
yep.
what, that's the difference. You, yep. They're not going to go, oh, our photographer. You know, our photographer. They're going to say Bruce.
Yeah.
They're going to refer to you by name.
Yep.
And so that for you is the business plus. You know, that is where you will, you know, continue to be successful with that particular client and all of their clients, because you're Bruce. You're not the photographer.
Yeah.
You know, there are a million photographers out there. We're a dime a dozen. Let's face it. We are a dime a dozen.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
You just got to look at Flickr to feel insignificant.
Oh, absolutely. And stuff, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, it's true. We are a dime a dozen. Mm. But when but the good ones who provide, you know, great photographs, but also the professional experience and a little bit of themselves, or in your case, probably a lot of yourself, they're going to make the difference between, you know, those who can and those who can't. That is so absolutely true in, I think, every aspect of professional photography, unless you're a loner photographing soapboxes in your studio. And I don't know, but might be a great income, but that's not what I want to do.
But, you know, even if that was the style of photography you were doing, there is still the room to, you know, either be personable with the client, even if it is only over the phone, or to be a grouch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think location necessarily defines how you should act, you know.
No, yeah. Anyway. Absolutely true. And if you're listening to this and you want to, you know, you want to be a wedding photographer, particularly wedding photographer, if you're not a great, you know, if you're not bringing yourself, the best of yourself as a person to the wedding, don't do it, really. Oh, I've done this. Ooh, here we go. Get him to hug in front of a tree. And, you know, please don't do weddings, because, you know, it might be your 1,000th wedding, but it's their first, or, you know, it's their one special day. Don't stuff it up just because you stuff it up for them just because you've done it 1,000 times. And it doesn't even matter, even if, you know, you've done a portrait session 1,000 times, photographed, you know, Paul Mercurio 1,000 times. It doesn't matter. You know, it's your job to be a person, to be Bruce Williams or Shelton Muller, photographer. But that name, you know, is, I'm not, you know, a dime a dozen photographer. I'm not going to just provide you with photographs. Anybody can do that, right? Yeah. I do it well. Yes, I do it well, but that's what you expect from me. You know, to hand over great photographs on a disc is no big deal for a photographer. It's not a woohoo, look at these great photographs, because that's what's expected of you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't hire a plumber and expect him to come and stuff up the job. He's going to fix my sink.
Yeah.
Right? And you're going to take great photographs, but you're going to, you know, the one that they remember will be, yeah, the great photographs, but the great service and the great person. The person they take pleasure in dealing with, because there's enough displeasure in life as it is, you know? We want to deal with people that we enjoy dealing with, just even if it's just to make our lives a little bit happier on that day.
Yeah.
And the value of that in your business, I mean, you already understand that, Bruce, but I don't think there are enough photographers who really do understand that aspect of earning a living from photography. I think it's underplayed, underestimated, and not spoken about enough.
Well, I would go so far as to extend that to say that there are too many people in a whole heap of industries who don't understand that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's a problem that's limited only to the phonographic arena, you know? I mean, God, yeah. I've seen my share of grumpy plummets.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We had our plumber came in, and yeah, like I said, he was very careful to not dirty up the carpet. He put his measure, the way he put his tools, wasn't going to damage anything. He cleaned up after himself. He was a bit funny. He also provided a good invoice. It wasn't expensive. You know, he was less than sort of I expected. And I thought, wow, you know, this is great. And he's not only a plumber, but I mean that's not expected of him. But he did it anyway. And I thought, well, either that's just the name of that's the kind of person you are, or you also understand that repeat business is not just about fixing my sink.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
repeat business is about relationships and who you are as a person.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad that worked out well for you, mate. You're going to get more work out of them, if indeed you haven't already. I don't know.
Not yet, but I'm sure there will be.
Oh, yeah.
So after that 3-day trip wound up, I spent the night in Armidale in a motel room. And seriously, man, I was so full of food after that 3-day trip. I did not have dinner that night, and I didn't have breakfast the next day. It was just crazy. But
cycling off that belly ever since.
Oh, I have, absolutely. So anyway, the following day, Kath and Max drove up from Sydney and picked me up. And we then headed across from Armidale to Grafton to my mother-in-law's place where we spent the night. And from there, we headed up to Caloundra on the Sunshine Coast, just north of Brisbane. And we had 4 nights at Golden Beach, which is a sort of like a suburb of Caloundra, if you like. And I took a sequence of photos while I was there that I was pretty happy with. And I pointed it to a couple of those out to you. The blue panoramic, it's not actually a panorama. It was just shot on my 20mm and then cropped of the moonrise with the dinghy and the lights of Caloundra in the background. I was really happy with that because it was kind of a spur of the moment thing. Like, I looked at the scene and I went, I like the dinghy as the foreground interest. I love the lights in the city out in the background and the moon and just a few wisps of cloud there. And pretty much straight away, I thought, if I just shoot this as it is right now, that dinghy is just going to come out as a dark black shadow because all of the light is behind it.
Yeah.
Namely, the city lights off in the distance and the bright moon.
Yeah.
And this was only about 100 meters away from our hotel where we were staying, or our resort where we were staying. So I raced back up to my room and grabbed the torch out of the bedside table and went back down and set up again. And that image is about a 30-second exposure. And while the shutter was open, I just played the torch across the dinghy for 20 seconds or so.
Yep.
And it was not something... I mean, I suppose I pre-visualized it, which is something you've drummed into me over all these years. But it was just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. It was like, I need some light on that dinghy. What can I do? And it seemed like the torch was the best and probably the only option available to me. And I kind of like the fact that, you know, the torch being a tungsten light bulb, you know, has that sort of orangey color of light to it.
Yeah,
and I was just really happy with the way that image came out.
That's lovely, and very successful in its technical, you know, aspect as well. Very nicely done. You know, something we're talking a lot about in our workshops now is that, and this is something again that I don't think photographers really understand. A lot of photographers, anyway, is that good photography, successful photography, is 5% creativity and 95% problem solving. Your photograph here is a prime example of that.
Yeah,
you saw it. I mean, it's, you know, we're creative people. We see stuff in our head and we go, oh, yeah, that'd be, you know, that I could create that. That's, you know, I can see it in my head. Ah, the difference, though, between, you know, creating it in your head and creating it in the camera is that another 95%.
Yeah.
Here's some problem. Every photograph is going to present you with some problem. It could be small, could be big. You know, there it is. It's bam. What are you going to do? And that's the great part of this challenge. I love that about, you know, photography. In that, it comes with that challenge. I mean, if it was easy to get to the top of Mount Everest, fewer people would do it. and you know,
you mean more people would do it?
No, I mean probably there were maybe more people to do it, but they wouldn't get the same thrill out of it.
No, that's.
You know, I mean, yeah, great. Here's Everest. You know, I mean, if they had a sort of helipad at the top, you know, and it cost $20 to get there, yeah, I'd do it. But you wouldn't feel the same sense of achievement, you know.
No.
And the great thing about photography is that it does have that challenge, but unless you know how to rise to that challenge, unless you gather the knowledge, and that's what we're all doing, you can't create it. You can't do it. No matter how creative you are in your head, you know, another person would try to take that photograph, and unless they had your problem-solving ability and your experience, they could see it in their head, and they'd go, oh, I wish, and they'd try and take it, I wish, and they couldn't actually execute it. You've executed it because you saw a problem, understood what was going to happen, ran back to your room, grabbed a flashlight, and fixed it.
Yeah.
You know, that, and again, 5% creativity, 95% problem solving. Mm. That is especially true in professional photography, wedding photography particularly.
Oh yeah.
And you know, in this particular scene, because I'm looking at this photograph on your blog.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, how did you get that boat so still? I mean, the water must have been pretty still.
It was. Yep.
Over 30 seconds. But yeah, you've got that golden light on it. I'm thinking, where's that light source coming from? And it's not until you just told me then, and then I'm having a bit of a, you know, read through your blog that I can see that that's what, you know, you've done. And I must admit, that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
You know, just get that. And it's great because, you know, we've done that many times. We did that at Tekapo, the church on Tekapo, Lake Tekapo in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
When we were down, photographing down there in on the way back from Queenstown at our New Zealand workshop tour.
Which was April last year?
Yeah, April, May last year. And we wanted to do this 20-minute sort of star trail behind it. But we realized that there was going to be no light on the front. So we literally, during the exposure, you know, walked around and either painted it with a bit of flash for one exposure and then used our little handheld torches for another. So problem solving.
Yep.
Great photography is, you know, see it in your head, but then problem solve. Make the thing actually happen. You know, nicely done.
Thank you.
And I can see from your blog that you're not one to sleep in, Bruce.
No.
There's some good sunrise photographs here as well of the same boat too.
Yeah, yeah. I really liked that dinghy. It was just a nice distance off the shore. You know, that you could frame it for foreground interest. It wasn't too close to the shore to be, you know, too in your face, but it was just far enough out that it sort of just sat nicely in the frame. You know, so. Yes, yeah. I exploited it while it was there.
Nicely done, too, mate. Yeah. Well done. You know, you've seen it, made it happen. That's the difference, again, between, you know, successful photographers and those who aren't quite as successful. Being able to not only, you know, see the image, but to make it happen. You know, photography is like, in many ways, is like music. You know, we can all hear it in our head. I can whistle a lead break like you've never heard before. Put me on a guitar and try to get me to play the damn thing. That's where it takes, you know, that's where I got to know where to put my fingers. But I can play, I'm a bit of a whistler, you see. I've been whistling since I was 2 years old. And I remember, you know, a guitar player overhearing me whistle some sort of made up lead break on the spot behind, or some, you know, stuff I was just whistling along to a song, in counterpoint kind of thing. And he said, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could only play like we whistle? And and in photography, wouldn't it be great if we could only take like we see? That's essentially the battle, making sure that we take the image that we actually imagine in our head. That's where the experience and the knowledge building, you know, and the knowledge gathering comes in. Well done. You've had a great time.
Right. Yeah, you did. Know. Thank you, mate.
Well done.
Yeah.
Good. Well, it's been an interesting few weeks for us as well at Creative Photo Workshops. We've been, you know, running some workshops as per usual.
Yep.
And we've got a few great things coming up. Our Castlemania event in early March.
Right.
Which is the first weekend in March. We're doing another weekend in the Goldfields area of Victoria. Still a few places left for that if anybody's interested. So we have that coming up. But this year will be an interesting year for us because we're building a new website, Creative Photo World. We're doing a new e-magazine, a downloadable magazine that you'll be able to, you know, chuck on your iPad or read online on your laptop or whatever. Going to be called Creative Photo Magazine, you know,
that, so what
with a March
format,
launch date.
What format? Mm-hmm. What format will that be in?
PDF.
Okay, cool.
Yep, it'll be a PDF at this stage. It's the most commonly acceptable sort of format for, you know, pads, computers, etc. So that's going to be our project for 2011. Get that magazine up and running, and we've got some great plans for that. And like I said, we have a launch date of March the 1st to get that up and running. And we have our tutorial website being built as we speak. So that's going to be pretty cool as well. So, you know, keep your ears open for the kinds of things we're doing. We did a shoot on Friday. I've just finished blogging it before we started this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be doing a lot of little, you know, video tutorials on the web as well. So every week we're now, you know, doing a shoot and creating a tutorial video from that. Last week we did one on using grids on our off-camera flash to, you know, really direct the light and create certain effects. Very simple techniques, very accessible to the photographer, and you know, making the whole experience just that little bit more creative without having to go to great expense, without having to be in awesome locations or whatever. This is just some abandoned factory that we went to, and it's pretty cool, but you know, not necessarily you know, the only place in the world where you can do the kinds of photographs we want to talk about. So, you know, there's a lot planned, but I know that our listeners wanted us to do a series this you know, to start off this year. Mm-hmm. On composition.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, next we'll start some of the to my mind, let's start getting into the nitty-gritties of that in our next podcast, you know, in terms of technicality.
Yep.
But to be honest, mate, what I wanted to talk about was fear.
Okay.
Just plain fear. And wasn't it Roosevelt who said, you know, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Fear itself.
And I think when it comes to photography, composition seems to be one of those things that and it surprises me, but I've learned this in the workshops that we run, that composition has a fear element also attached to it. I always thought that people were afraid of the technicalities of photography. Who was it who referred to it on our podcast a while back as the hard and the soft?
Oh, you know, yeah. I remember the comment. I don't remember who it was that made it.
Yes, one of our many, many listeners, and it's sort of stuck in my head that it was. And he was saying, "Look, I get, you know, I've got the hard down pat, but it's the soft that I have a problem with." So he's got the technicalities right, but I have the soft. You know, I've got to get a little bit more creative. And great photographers have a great balance of both. And we spend our lives, I think, in the pursuit of knowledge. As you know, a la, let's see this, let's solve the problem and get this image made to match our creativity. But we also, of course, look for inspiration to build our tools creatively as well. So we spend our creative lives as photographers building this knowledge base simply that we can create the images we want. But when it comes to composition, I always thought that. And I've learned this, you know, you learn a lot when you're teaching others. You learn a lot about where the problems really lie. And I never thought that composition would be as big a problem in photography as I've learned, you know, in many ways, in many cases, that it is. And fear seems to be one of the issues. And I'm talking about the fear of composing dynamically. And I'm not going to put a specific definition on that. I'm just going to use that expression and allow our listeners to sort of think about that in terms of their own photography. But one of the biggest issues in composition that we find in running our workshops is the inability for people to A, properly place the elements within the frame. So that's what we should discuss over the next few weeks, I think.
Okay.
Work out what the elements are, work out, you know, how important they are, and then work out the most aesthetic or even sensible placement of them within the frame.
So is it fear or is it lack of knowledge?
It's fear because, well, it's both. It's both. But the thing I want to talk about is fear, first of all. I want to give our listeners a week to think about this. When you're composing a photograph, are you afraid to leave things out? Are you afraid to make a decision regarding, you know, a part of a person's face, a part of a person's body, a part of a landscape that you see in front of you? Now, you'd know, Bruce, that we can be standing in front of a vista, and we have a decision to make. We either photograph the entire vista and perhaps make a very boring photograph, not always, but often, or we need to choose a part of that scene that defines the rest of it or is just enough in itself. You know, the more you put in a photograph, the less any particular element, you know, becomes important.
You know, I don't know if I've mentioned this little anecdote on the podcast before, so please forgive me if I have, because I'm gonna say it again or for the first time, whichever the case may be. I read a fantastic quote by Sir George Martin. And for those who don't know who Sir George Martin was, he was the engineer.
Where have you been?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was the engineer who engineered all of the Beatles records.
Mm.
And he talked about how his approach when mixing the Beatles songs. Right now, for those who don't understand the recording process, you have a multi-track tape recorder that allows you to record a different sound on every track. And so quite often musicians will lay down all different ideas for a song, you know, within this musical track, you know, so you'll have drums on a handful of tracks and then you'll have guitar parts on different tracks and bass guitar and all these vocal parts and tambourine and God knows what else you want to throw in, right? But yeah. when it actually comes to the mixing phase, you might not necessarily use everything that was recorded, right?
Yes.
Sometimes you'll go, yeah, look, you know, that guitar line just really doesn't fit, or it's clashing with some other major elements of the song, so we'll just leave it out of the mix. And Sir George Martin made this great comment that he said when it came to mixing the songs for the Beatles, he always took the approach, what is the bare minimum that I can put into the mix that will convey what this song wants to convey?
Mm.
Not how much crap can I cram into the mix, but what's the absolute minimum that I can use to get the idea across. And I think that's very, it's like a musical analogy to what you're talking about with regards composition. You're talking about shooting a whole vista, but you know, maybe you don't need it all. Maybe you can just selectively choose one element of it, and that gets the idea across.
Yes. I mean, the same is in photographing the human face at our workshops, especially our creative natural light photography people workshop, whatever we're calling it now. I don't know. It's morphed. You know, I hope Glenn isn't listening to this podcast. He's going to go, "Oh, Shelton, oh, it is our
you're a public relations
light
nightmare."
Oh, yes, our natural light creative people photography workshop. We're probably going to shorten that title because, you know, what are we talking about? Simplification, yeah, right? What to leave in, what to leave out. But, you know, in that particular workshop, we encourage people to just try it. We don't, you know, enforce it as a rule. But to get people past this fear barrier, we actually get them to take that step forward, really compose the face nice and tight, and chop the top of the head off, you know, make it just move right out of the top of the frame, right from the middle of the forehead down, right? Do you know how many people have a problem doing that? We will say, go on, do it, and they go bang, they go in, they take the photograph, they compose, click, and they come back, yeah, I did it, and they come back and it's still there. The hair is, the top of the head is still in the photograph. Then we go, no, you didn't. Look, it's still there. Really? Oh, look at that. How did I do that? Oh, go back, do it again. We go back, they go back, they do it again, come back, it's still there. And they'll go back three or four times. We'll say, look, it's still there. And then you know what I have to do, Bruce? I have to walk over to the model and I have to put my hand, you know, on her forehead. And I say, if you can see my hand in your frame, this is not, then you're not doing what we're suggesting.
Yeah.
And they freak out because you're just getting so close. And yet, if you have a look at like some of my most successful portraits, I think that's exactly what I've done.
Yeah.
You know, just really put the eyes in that dynamic third position. You know, some, not always, but often you get in that close and bam, you know, the eyes just leap out at you. And, you know, they are properly placed compositionally within the frame. Now, I'm not saying that that's a rule and that's what you should do with every photo. I don't believe in rules. But what I'm learning is that people are so afraid to take that extra step forward to just get what doesn't need to be in, you know, out of the frame, and then but to make a decision regarding the importance of something. To me, it's not always important to have the top of the head in the frame. We know the person's got hair, or in my case, not. And I'd rather be photographed from the middle of the forehead down anyway, just in case, right? So I talk about fear because we often tend to lack the ability to kick something out. It doesn't need to be there. I'm trying to put too much in, like you're saying about Sir George Martin, you know, what needs to be there? Yeah, sure. That extra guitar bit there was pretty cool. That's a great bit of playing. That's awesome. I mean, not everybody can play that bit of guitar. That was pretty fast little lick there. But actually, when I throw it into the rest of the mix, it really just complicates things.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool little guitar lick, but I'm going to have to let it go. That'd be the tough part. Mm. That's the real tough part, you know, because it's a really cool little guitar lick, but not going to, you know. If you ever watched, there was a series, what was it called? It was all about the classic, it was called Classic Albums. Did you ever see it?
I've seen one or two of the episodes.
Yeah, and they go into some of the classic albums like Fleetwood Mac, Rumours,
yep.
Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd.
Yeah, Bat Outta Hell.
Bat Outta Hell.
Joshua Tree. Absolutely.
Yes, Joshua Tree. And they actually play, they get the original recordings, the original, you know, track, the original tape, put it onto the machine, and they show you the tracks that they recorded that never made it into the final mix. And they actually talk about, oh, we did this, but no, it just didn't seem to work, or, you know, it was a bit too much, so we kicked it out. Imagine if they'd thrown it all in. And like you said, if we apply that rule to our photography, oh, that's a pretty cool thing, let me throw that in. That's a pretty cool thing, let me throw that in. You're starting to really lose your message here. I often define it as, in our workshops, as someone who takes a hell of a long time to get to the point when you're talking to them. They'll go here and they'll talk about this, and you're going, look, mate, please, what's the point? What are you trying to tell me, you know?
Easy on there, mate. And you're criticizing my podcasting technique.
crap, giggle, giggle, fucking information. Crap, giggle, giggle. But, you know, it can be quite annoying when someone says, oh, look, you know, it's just something I'd like to, you know, talk to you about. And then 20 minutes later, you still have no idea, you know.
where it's going.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be rotten to get to the end of that conversation? The person goes, you know, thanks, mate. I really appreciate you, you know, listening to me, and walks off, and you still don't know what the heck is the point. If that's our photograph, then there's too much in it.
Yeah.
If, you know, we've been scared to get that stuff out. Really, what I want you to do is just say, hey, Shelton, look, I just wanted to talk to you, mate. Just thought I'd let you know that your breath stinks, and you should go brush your teeth or use a... Really? Oh, thanks, mate. I'm going to a party tonight. I really appreciate you telling me that. You know, rather than go into a long thing about the invention of toothpaste and how in ancient times people used twigs to brush their teeth, and did you ever realize that, you know, flossing is actually something and not as new of an invention as we think it is? And at the end of it, you're going, yeah. What's, you know? I really just wanted him to say that my breath stinks, you know? That's photography to me.
Yeah.
You know, your breath stinks. Bam, this is the photo. That's what it's saying. Deal with it. You don't want it to beat around the bush. So let's remove the fear from our photography and just say, I only want my photograph to say this. And the other thing that's around, that's a separate photograph. That's not in this photo. Let's see if we can, before we talk about the rules of composition and all the things that we can employ technically and geometrically into our images, let's make sure that, first of all, we understand that we do actually apply a lot of fear in our compositions, and we try to make them things that they're not, and that's just not going to work, you know. What needs to be in, leave it in, but therein is the decision. Does it need to be in there? And let's think about that in the next week that we have, you know, between now and our next podcast. And if you've got some, like, things, if you found that to be the case with you, or you have maybe a differing viewpoint, I'd love to hear it. Because I know this crops up all the time at our workshops. And if you've battled with it, or just vehemently disagree with us, or me, I don't know how you feel about this, Bruce. I haven't let you come in edgewise here. But... you know, email us and let us know that either it's been an issue for you, you want to know more, or you vehemently disagree. But, you know, you can have all the technical elements of your photograph absolutely spectacular. Your exposure spot on, your sharpness, your bokeh, everything spot on. But if your composition sucks, your photograph is ruined. You know, very little. It's again, if we use a music analogy, it's like my old friend who played the violin. You know, he knew all the technicalities, but he made that thing sound like a strangled cat. And his composition was just terrible. He had no feel. And, you know, you can know music, but if you can't arrange the elements of music to compose a song, then what's the point of all the stuff that you know? Get the technicalities right, learn them, but remember, we are composing photographs. We are arranging the elements within the frame for them to be pleasing images visually, you know, not technical masterpieces.
What I would maybe suggest is if anyone's listening to this and is looking forward to the following series of podcasts on composition, then maybe make it a weekly project for this week, like after you've heard this episode, to just go and grab, you know, your medium range zoom, whether it's an 18 to 55 or, you know, a 28 to 75 or whatever, and do a series of portraits with a loved one or, you know, your son or your daughter or whoever, where you start out where the entire head and shoulders is in the frame, and then just zoom in a little bit and take another shot, and then zoom in a little bit and take another shot, and just cover the entire range right through to the point where all you're seeing is a nose.
Yeah.
Mate, right.
What a great idea.
Okay, I mean, you're gonna have a whole heap of photos that are totally worthless, but by moving in just a little bit with every shot, and obviously, you know, keep the eyes on the, you know, your dynamic thirds, you know, if that's what you want to do, but you know what I'm saying? Like cover that whole range and see how that moving in just a little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit closer every time changes the composition.
Yeah. And at what point do you start to say, oh, hang on, I'm starting to lose really essential things here. You know, that's the point where you're saying, okay, step back just a little, bam. And that's probably your shot, you know. But the weakest photographs are the same. Weak photographs are the same as weak pieces of music or weak conversations. You know, a conversation that is, you know, roundabout and purposeless is a weak conversation.
Yep.
It's, you know, small talk. I don't want my photographs to be small talk.
No.
I want them to have purpose, meaning. I want them to be interesting. I want them to grab the viewer. I want them to have some purpose, you know, to say something, whether even if it's just, isn't this person pretty? Isn't the light on that gorgeous? Isn't that a sad event? Whatever it might be, they have to say something, and say only that something, not that and, oh, by the way, something else, you know?
Do you know,
let's be very frank in our photographs. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, there's one thing that I would add, and this is kind of playing devil's advocate a little bit, and I only bring this up because... sorry, I missed that comment. What was that?
I said, I hate it when you do that.
and I only bring this comment up because this has been my experience with my Alpha 850, and that is that with the Alpha 850, the viewfinder only covers 98% of what the frame picks up.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, is there any possibility that something like that is occurring with not all of the people who attend your workshops, but maybe there are some who are falling prey to that same phenomenon where your viewfinder doesn't show you 100% of what your frame, like what your sensor is actually seeing?
Yeah, I'm not talking about 5% though.
Oh, okay. You
know, I'm talking 30%, you know, 40%.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, and it is considered, and it's, you're absolutely right, but I'm not talking 5%, you know.
Right.
I'm talking, you know, a lot more than that, 20, 30%.
Right.
And you know, those who've been to our portrait workshop will remember that, yeah, we go through this exercise. And they'll be so consumed by the fact that they want to meter this right, they want to get the right depth of field, et cetera, and we do push that very heavily at our workshop. Get the, you know, solve the problem as we've been talking about. Make sure that your technicalities are great so that you can pull this image straight out of the camera and go, yep, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that it's a photograph, and the thing that you used, that you did before you came to our workshop, which was probably composition, you've now forgotten it because you're trying to, you know, do all the technicalities. Yes, get the technicalities right. Get that part of your brain sorted. Get the exposure right, la, 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 la. But once that's settled, then you've got all the time in the world, because light's not going anywhere, nothing's changing. You've got all the time in the world to now just scan the edge of your frame, make sure that nothing is there that you, you know, don't want there. Move in tight, get that shot, bam, make it dynamic. I mean, that's just one style of photograph. We don't always have to get in tight. But photographers often are very afraid of breaking rules, or, you know, doing things that other photographers don't do, or somebody said, oh, I should never do this. To hell with what somebody said. You know, this is your image. How do you see it? What do you want it to say? Well, make it say only that. No one can tell you what your photograph should say. Yeah. It's your photograph. You say it. So let's think about our own photography over this next 168 hours or so, and ask ourselves, you know, am I afraid when I compose? Some of the greatest pieces of music ever written were written by you know, musicians who dispelled the theory and dispelled the rules, and, you know, were not afraid to create awesome pieces of music that, you know, broke the conventional rules. And out of those removals of fear, we've had entirely new genres of music introduced to us, jazz just being one of them, you know.
Yeah.
It's jazz initially was, you know, and considered a whole bunch of instruments just playing different stuff at the same time. Nobody ever did that. You know, Mozart would be turning in his grave, although Mozart, quite, you know, maybe I chose the wrong composer because he was a rule breaker himself. But we wouldn't have these new genres of music that we now accept as, you know, awesome, timeless, you know, genres of music, if somebody hadn't said, ah, the hell with the rules, I'm going to have a trombone and a trumpet and a, you know, and a cornet and a French and a flugelhorn all playing three different things at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and throw a mix into that. We'll have some drums and some bass and some guitar and a piano, and it'll all sound good. Trust me. I mean, I'm not saying we do that in our photographs because we've just been talking about simplification, but all I'm saying is somebody broke the rules.
Yeah.
And we've got jazz. And don't worry about what your camera club judge says, or what somebody told you on YouTube, or even what we say in this podcast. This is your photograph. Just make sure it makes one solid, strong, bam, point. And that's when your photographs become dynamic. And composition is a very large element of that bam that you want, that point that you want your photograph to say. So let's start off our series on composition with that point in mind, and maybe next week and the week after we can start talking about how to compose from a technical and geometrical standpoint. What do you reckon, Bruce?
Sounds very good, mate. One quick thing to mention before we wrap up is that the Egypt tour has been indefinitely postponed, shall we say?
Well, at this stage, I mean, by the time we were planning to do the tour, things would probably settle down in Egypt. But, you know, you don't want to be selling a tour when a country's, you know, being looted and pillaged and stuff in an endeavor to overthrow its government.
Yeah.
It's very hard to sell that, which is very sad, because Egypt is just, you know, one of those awesome places. And despite what the news media says about, you know, or shows you, you know, on the news about the people there, I love the people in Egypt, and, you know, would go there at any time, except maybe, you know, today.
Yeah.
We're looking at perhaps replacing that time of year, the tour through Egypt, with a tour through India, where, of course, as you know, my son and I were in 2009.
Yep.
And I think probably I was enabled to take some of the greatest photographs of my life. I would go back to that part of the world anytime. So I'm going to talk to some tour operators and get a photo tour to India organized. I know some people. See whether that's possible. But if you're interested in coming to India but you're not quite sure how the photographs look, go to sheltonmuller.com and have a look at my India photographs under my travel section in my website, and see whether you'd like to have that kind of experience for yourself. So I'll keep you posted on that front, everybody. Mm-hmm. But for the moment, it looks like Egypt is a no-go. Yeah.
Mm. All right, then. Well, mate, good to catch up.
You too, mate. It's good to catch up with you.
Please keep any... get the emails started up again. I won't say keep them coming in because we haven't had any for an age.
Yeah.
Please email us, theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com. And hopefully we'll talk to you again next week, mate.
I would really love to get people's thoughts on my little rant. I really would. I'm really keen to hear what their experiences have been. And I don't care if you vehemently disagree. I'd love you to vehemently disagree. That's what this is all about. But if you agree, it's because maybe you've had the same experience. But please, let me know what you think about my little rant, because, as you can tell, I'm fairly passionate on the subject. So, you know. And we'll talk more about this next week in episode 100 and what is it?
75 next week.
Something like that. of shuttersinc.podcast.com. What is that website again?
Shuttersincpodcast.com.
You see, there I was your plant, mate. I was your feet.
All right, mate. Good to talk to you.
You too, mate.
And we'll talk to you next week.
You bet. See you soon.
See ya. Shuttersinc.
For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.